Well, if you'd like, sure.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you a little bit about that, what happened in 19. We knew, well, it all started actually with the change in the international relations, with the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989. Because the army, up to that time, could not get enough tank engines. We couldn't make them fast enough. They looked at the military planners, looked at Warsaw Pact, and they said, "Whoa, my God, those commies, they've got 60,000 or 70,000 tanks, and we only have 5,000. So
More
we need
tanks.
more tanks."
Yeah.
And so, as I say, the army couldn't get enough tanks, and they were planning to build a next generation. They were already even a better tank. They always have on the drawing boards the future models of military weapons. And so it looked like there was going to be a long-term secure future there. And that all changed with, or began to change with the decline of the fall of the Berlin Wall, in the end, the military threat in Europe. The army, the Congress started cutting back on the budget, and we in the union were trying to push management to focus more on the commercial work to try to stabilize employment there. During the peak production of tank engines, the Army, because it owned the plant, they were able to dictate the production schedule. They said, "Our engines are a priority. And if you have, once you get our engines built and delivered every month, then if you want to make commercial engines, that's fine." And the plant was always at a production deficit. In other words, they were always panicking and running at the end of the month to try to meet their quotas for the month. So it was when the army worked, so in response, what the company did to try to, the army was threatening to take away the, develop a second source for this tank engine.
Oh, okay.
And that would have been hurt the business and caused a lot more layoffs. So there was a big political fight with the congressional delegation in Connecticut to try to stop the army from developing a second source for tank engines. And the union and the company joined together. Obviously, we were looking for jobs, and they wanted to keep the business. And we lobbied with them in Washington. And one of the things that the company had to agree to was to offload, to send out all the commercial work. So all they did was they did the assembly and the test of the engines, but the manufacture of those commercial engines was done at all around the country by little vendors around the country. And so it was our feeling now, as this work, the tank work, started to slow down, that the company should start to reload this commercial work and to take the slack.
Okay, sure.
The slack. 1994, we had mass layoffs started again in 1992. We had perhaps the union never, we never did get back up to its our peak during the Vietnam. We got the plant went up to about 7,000 employees, and usually it was about 50-50. We had the, I think the peak of Local 1010 was about 2,800 members. That was in the mid 1980s, and then gradually the layoffs began. And then in the 1992, 91, 92 time frame, they began to really accelerate, where we got into mass layoffs again, several hundred, or perhaps even almost 1,000 Local 1010 bargaining employees. So we went into negotiations in 1994 with Textron Corporation. And there was a lot of speculation what's going to happen to the company. Midway through negotiations, the contract expired in May 30th. Of 1994, on May the 12th, or May the 11th, there was an announcement that Allied Signal and Textron Corporation had signed a memorandum of understanding that would eventually lead to the acquisition, if all things went well for both corporations, it would lead to the acquisition of the business by Allied Signal Engines. Textron said, "We want to get out of the business." And Allied said, "Well, this is compatible with our business. We have another aircraft engine manufacturing plant in Phoenix, Arizona," which was non-union, "and other facilities around the country." So we, during our negotiations, we intercepted some confidential company documents that indicated very strongly that Allied Signal was planning to close the Stratford plant, move manufacturing to Phoenix, Arizona, after it acquired the business. So, but they had a clause in this memorandum of understanding between the two corporations that Allied would not buy the business unless Textron negotiated a contract that was acceptable to Allied. So basically, Textron wanted to sell the business, Allied wanted to buy, and essentially we were had a veto power. So all of a sudden, it changed the leverage of the 1994 bargaining from a very weak position that the union had. Now all of we found ourselves in a very strong position.
Sure.
We were not on strike. We, instead of the contract expired May 30th, we continued to work, which is unusual for us, the first time we've ever done that. And our tradition had always been, if we do not have a signed agreement as of the midnight on the date the contract expires, we're on strike, whether it was for a day or a two, or in the longest one was in 1970 against Apple Corporation. We were on strike for about 10 weeks. We continued to work in 1994 on a day-to-day contract extension, and nothing changed. In other words, the wages, benefits, everything stayed as is. And Allied was in the back room. So they were prohibited from sitting directly at the bargaining table with us because they didn't own the business. And the rules of the Federal Trade Commission told them they had to stay at arm's length until the acquisition was consummated. But we were negotiating with Textron management, and we were, our big issue was job security. He says, listen, we feel we're not going to sign a contract with you, and you're going to give us all these nice things, and a year later we don't have a job. So that would be a fool's bargain, you know. At any rate, we near the end, the company finally did agree. They said, listen, Allied Signal is going to need some help from the union to get some funding, because the Army has set up as what they call a Blue Ribbon Task Force in Washington to evaluate the future of the Stratford plant and the way they could preserve the tank engine industrial base that plant represented. It was unique and it wasn't duplicated anywhere else in the country. So the Blue Ribbon panel had recommended that they do preserve it and do several things. One is to bring more commercial work back in the Stratford plant. The other is they would come up to downsize the plant. They would fund it, a package of funding proposals, and part of that was $6 million to downsize the plant. They didn't, the plant was a really a big 2 million square feet. It wasn't really very efficient or economical, and the volume of production made it a lot of overhead. So that was another of the recommendation. And the other was to, they had a program to overhaul all the tank engines, and they wanted to do it at Stratford. And these were particularly the most difficult engines to overhaul. There were real problems. So Textron says, listen, Allied really doesn't, you know, would like to stay here at Stratford. They're willing to commit, but they're going to need some help from the union. And they will agree to work out an agreement with you to keep this work here. All the, there was six engine, different engine models. They'll keep them there for the, at least the 3 years of the contract till 1997. And then we will we'll work with you, and we can make the plant viable, change the methods of manufacturing. We'll stay here long term, indefinitely, and it'll be everybody, it'll be a win-win proposition. But we also need your help in, politically in Washington, help us get Congress to release this funding, approve the funding. So we says, fine, we agreed. We signed a contract with them in July of 1994. July 21st was ratified by the membership. And we had a side agreement, a comprehensive two. One was what we called an effects agreement. That dealt with problems that were going to flow from the sale of the business from Textron to Allied. We anticipated there would be further layoffs in 1995 when the Army would their procurement of tank engines was due to stop altogether.
Okay.
And there was a few, we were looking, Allied and Textron had been trying to develop some foreign market sales for the tanks to Egypt, to Saudi Arabia, and it was the only there was one order that there were, the last order, the last 80 tanks went to the government of Kuwait. So we had agreed to sign that what we call a competitiveness agreement. And it was basically, it was a revolutionary document as far as we were concerned, considering our history, the militants, the confrontation, the wildcats. And we had agreed, that during this time I was the vice president, by the way. I had become the vice president in 1976, the vice president of the local. And my predecessor, Joe Soucy, who had been the president since 1976, he became president, I became vice president. He had some very serious health problems, and he was, and eventually he passed away in 1994, October 1st, that's when I became.
Okay, so you're saying you became president of the local in 94?
Yes, in 1994, October 1st. And the business, the sale was consummated on October the 28th, 1994. Allied Signal then took over the Stratford business. They bought it for $375 million from Textron. And as I say, we had signed this competitiveness agreement with Textron. And now Allied had assumed all the contracts, including this competitiveness agreement, where we committed to do a lot of things. There was a lot of, our experience was the plant was, manufacturing was very not very efficient. Okay. And we worked with management. Basically, they asked us, they said, listen, you guys know this business. We don't. We really need your help if we're going to be successful here. So we did. I set up a lot of committees. I got joint committees with the company representatives for reload, for quality, for cross-training of employees, safety, a lot of things that... you know, it was a mutual benefit. One of the things, one part of the business the company was planning to move to Phoenix was the repair and overhaul of the commercial engines. They had decided we're going to move that, and we'll keep everything else, but we're going to move that to Phoenix. The union got an agreement in 1994 negotiations that they wouldn't move it for a six-month period. And during that six-month period, they would agree to work with the union and see what we could do to make this more competitive, keep that commercial work here in Stratford. We looked at it, and they had a facility, Allied, or Textron, and then later Allied acquired a facility they had in England where they overhauled the, they also had an overhaul center for commercial engines. Because the engines, the commercial engines we were using was for a British plane, the Avro RJ, regional jet made by Avro, which is its predecessor was the British Aerospace Corporation. And each one of those planes used four of our engines, $1 million an engine. So it was a substantial business. The regional jet business is a very fast-growing part of the commercial market. And the planes usually carry about 70 to 80 passengers. And the engine, as I say, was a very good engine. We were not very competitive at all with the facility in Lutton, England, or Phoenix, Arizona. In other words, the plane operators would send the engines back to the factory periodically to be overhauled. And what's crucial to them is the time it takes to overhaul. But the plane is on the ground, they're losing money.
Sure.
So they did a study, and they come in and says, listen, in Lutton, England, and in Phoenix, it takes them about 60 days to get an engine back out to the customer. About 500 hours of labor time, and they showed us it took the Stratford plant was the average was 105 days, and the about 800 hours of labor. So we set up a committee, joint committee, to go through with management. We went through. We got a lot of data. We basically told them why they had these problems in Stratford, and we showed them how to fix it. And as a consequence, they got the turnaround time on an engine in Stratford down to about 30 days and with about 250 hours of labor. So they were substantially under the competitors. An example, what they used to do, an engine would come to Stratford. They would disassemble it. Our mechanics would disassemble it. They would take the parts, now the components, they sent down to a subsidiary, a division down in Greer, South Carolina. Greer, in turn, would take that part. They would actually send it to a vendor up in Hartford, Connecticut, to do the actual work on it. So when it got up there, they usually call, a lot of times the plant in Hartford would call down for an engineer to go up and kind of give them some advice, technical advice on what to do and how to fix the part. So, and then after they fix it, remachine it, they would send it back to Greer. Greer then would send the part back to Stratford. So,
yeah, and you're like 50
right.
miles away.
So these are the kind of wasteful practices, business practices that we help them straighten out.